Okay, we're back with Matthew Yates, who's a quantitative investment manager for Seven Investment Management. I'm glad I got that out. Good morning to you, Matthew.
Good morning, guys.
And Mike Ingram, who's a strategist for BGC Partners, who's my co-host. Right, you've got two subjects you'd like to talk about, Matthew. First is the Brexit impact.
Yeah, I mean, probably the biggest thing that we woke up to on Monday morning in markets was the pound's reaction to Boris. I mean, who would have thought that Boris could move the markets as much as he did? But really, what was coming out of that was now we have a situation where the stay-in campaign can start to campaign for Brexit. So we've had the two sides of the debate. Now there's the Cameron's got his deal from the EU, and now kind of the positioning for this Brexit vote can start in earnest. Yeah, and Boris coming down on the side of the out campaign was really a big shock to many.
Probably to him as well.
Well, well, this is it. I mean, now you've got this strained mix of people on the out campaign now. You've got kind of Boris, you've got Gove, and then Farage. It's this strange mix of people on that side of the vote.
Lots of failed Tories from the past who've tried to come back for one last hurrah.
Well, you know, that is one side to take on it, but I think The fact is now we have both sides that can start their campaigning. I think we're going to see, as we have, a lot of movement around polls. It's going to be very much a Scottish referendum type event. But I think really as the in campaign can start to campaign in earnest, build up some momentum, I don't think it's something that we should be kind of fundamentally as worried about. But what is the potential impact on the markets? Well, clearly cable's been impacted quite heavily. That's now kind of below 140. There was a Bloomberg poll actually that I saw kind of this morning that said the impact of a Brexit, if it does happen, you know, 29 out of 34 people that they surveyed thought it could go down to 135 on cable. So that's kind of back to 1985, kind of horrific.
Well, we're most of the way there now, aren't we?
Well,
it's you know, that's 3%, yeah, from where we are now.
So, but that's where we are now, off an extremely low level, And so then if you look beyond, I suppose, the currency markets and then into fixed income and equities, and what are the transition mechanisms for kind of an EU vote or an EU exit into kind of the real economy? I think really we are a service-led economy, okay, and services would be the part of the economy that would be the most impacted by kind of an EU decision. So EU laws around kind of exporting of services has more an impact on services than it does on manufacturing. So the manufacturing piece very much becomes under the World Trade Organization would be the organization that would define how UK's trade and manufacturing would take place outside the EU. But we're an exporter of services and we're an importer from the EU of manufacturing. So that's going to be kind of a real drag, certainly. These are the sort of facts that I think the in campaign are going to be citing as this goes on and as this gains momentum. As I said, the UK stock market is around kind of 55% owned. It's probably most likely that the largest impact is going to be on the FTSE 250, right? So the FTSE 100 is more of an EM global mix, really. 75% of revenues in the FTSE 100 come from outside the EU. The FTSE 250 is always cited as, you know, your UK focused index. So I think for investors looking at the UK stock market, the FTSE 250 is the place to look. There's a lot of foreign ownership there as well. I think, you know, there'd obviously be some impact. When we look at gilts and the bond market in the UK, in terms of foreign ownership there, you know, you've got a degree as well, about a third, so it's a little bit less than the stock market. But the real challenge is, okay, so what are the ratings agencies saying, and what are the ratings agencies, how are they positioning for a Brexit? Both, I mean, it's surprise to no one, it would be a negative. So Moody's have positioned and said they're already at a kind of AA1 rating, so it's slightly below the AAA rating for the UK. They said that it would pretty much go from a stable outlook as it is at the moment to a negative outlook. So, you know, a net negative. S&P have come out, they've got a AAA rating on the UK, and they say that, you know, they would be downgrading. They're looking to downgrade.
So on a Brexit, they'd be downgrading?
On a Brexit.
Even though, let's say, with a Brexit, you'd have Scotland leaving and you'd have England there, which is actually the best economy in the UK.
I think the...
Aren't they just threatening us? bullying us.
No, I think if you look at what it would do for the economy, it would be the uncertainty around kind of investment decisions for UK businesses coming out of a Brexit vote. So although, you know, you can paint, as the Scottish did, you know, pictures about how rosy the economy and how strong the economy would be kind of in its independent form, really for large businesses within the UK, the problem would be around the future revenue cycle and the assurity around that for investment. And if you see that pullback, that's really going to be a net negative in the long term.
One of the things I thought was quite odd yesterday was around this very highly publicised list of UK company bosses saying, you know, we need to stay in. I think they said 36 of the FTSE 100. And so you had people such as Sainsbury's and Tesco's there talking about threat to jobs and investment. But these are essentially, particularly now Tesco's pulled its horns in, UK operations. And who didn't appear on the list, which was perhaps a surprise, were people like, you know, Toyota and Nissan, who are very big investors in the UK. And I mean, I've got to admit, I have this sort of sneaking suspicion, you know, many people saying, well, we actually want to have cheap labour coming into the country, helping, you know, because a lot of these are minimum wage jobs and a lot of these companies are the same companies who have been screaming about the national living wage coming in April, how awful it was going to be for their profitability. But the people who are actually making the big investments in the UK, you know, and again, I cited the automotive industry, which I guess is one of the big manufacturing success stories over the last 15, 20 years in the UK, they were absent. I mean, what do you think might be going on there? Leading question, I know, but...
Well, no, I think it's difficult to kind of pin down to the individual business level of what people are saying.
Sure.
I think I'd go back to, as I said before, it's the uncertainty around Brexit, which is going to be a net negative for all companies. I find it hard to think of a company that could make a case that, you know, the uncertainty surrounding a UK exit from the EU. They're talking about come out of 2 years of negotiations. Who knows what's going to come out of that negotiation process? Mm. The European Union is certainly not going to give the UK an easy ride in any exit negotiations that do take place. So I think, you know, beyond some named exceptions, as you know, which, you know, I don't know too much about the details of their specific stance, I would be surprised if the vast, vast majority of business leaders, especially as we get closer to the vote, are not coming in support of an EU.
OK, Matthew, we'll just go on to China because we've been worried about it. We've got the Brexit to worry about. Now we're sort of worrying fest at the moment. Why should we be less worried about China?
Well, that's exactly the point. It's a worry fest. It seems to chop and change from week to week about what we are worried about in 2016. China was certainly in the second week of the year. I mean, this was when you had all the, you know, the trigger mechanisms breaking, so breaking the stock market out as it fell below those trigger limits. Q3 last year, we were worried about the currency, so the renminbi devaluation, which was a shock to investors. Really, both of those things have kind of been removed. The trigger limits explicitly, and there was an interesting statement by the PBOC governor last week, which really put a lot of sense for me around the currency position in China. So what did we actually have in terms of the renminbi devaluation last year? We had a 6% fall, or 5-6% fall from the August, the first move, to the end of the year. Okay, a 2-3% fall was enough to trigger, you know, a massive fallout in markets. And what the PBOC governor said, and what he reminded us, is that this is a country that's come off a very stable FX path for a very long period of time, and that those relatively small moves shouldn't be a shock because they're kind of not business as normal for a currency.
Okay, well, on that note, Matthew Yates, quantitative investment manager for Seven Investment Management, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you very much.